Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade sales for January 2013 as sold through Diamond to retailers. Trades, of course, includes hardcovers, softcovers, original graphic novels, unoriginal graphic novels, totally contrived graphic novels. No, not kidding. In some cases, they contain things on this list that I think are a little surprising, but, you know, hey. We got a ton of different publishers and stuff. Obviously, the one that had the, not obviously, it's often, but not always, the one that had the lion's share of the total units for the top 300 trades for January 2013 this time was DC Comics, 33.37%, so almost exactly a third, a little over. Image Comics did very well, unsurprisingly, with 24.19% of the total units. Marvel came in third, not too far behind, with 22.86% of the total units. So once again, we've got three publishers in this case accounting for over 80% of the sales. We factor in Dark Horse, which had another 5.77%, and IDW, which had 3.93%, and the five premier publishers accounted for over 90% of the total unit sales for the top 300 in January. So
stranglehold.
Pretty much. Very uneven playing field. I think on the trade side, publishers have a better chance, but it's a tough market. There are a couple of interesting things we'll talk about on the... Well, actually, hell, let's just go jump into it now on the Marvel side.
Sure.
Marvel had a lot of Masterworks this time around. And what's interesting is the retail rank seems more or less in line with how it should be, so it's not like these...
Yeah.
Seem to have been, you know, fire sale type things. But periodically, you know, they do promotions and stuff through Diamond of, hey, we've got all this stuff. Do you want to come buy it? But we've got, let me filter the list down to just the Marvel Masterworks. We have Kazar Volume 1, Doctor Strange Volume 2, Amazing Spider-Man Volume 5, Atlas Era Journey into Mystery, Golden Age Human Torch Volume 3, Invincible Iron Man Volumes 4 and 5, Atlas Era Tales Volume 1, Atlas Era Tales of Suspense Volume 2, Atlas Era Strange Tales Volume 3, Golden Age Marvel Comics Volume 5, Golden Age All Winners Volume 1, Atlas Era Volume 2 Tales to Astonish, Golden Age Submariner Volume 1, Golden Age Daring Mystery Volume 1, Atlas Era Heroes Volume 3, Golden Age Daring Mystery Volume 2, Golden Age Submariner Volume 2, Golden Age USA Comics Volume 1, and Atlas Era Heroes Volume 2. So a lot of this is really, you know, their older Golden Age stuff. And these things ranged from Kazar's high of 1,040 to
That was the new one.
That was the new one. Actually,
new
one. The Doctor Strange one was also new.
Okay, yeah,
both of them.
Okay, right.
And that was 1,028. All you're right. All the rest, almost all the rest, was reordered. The Atlas Tales Volume 1. I don't have shipping information from, but given that we've got a few other volumes after it, I'm going to say that was reordered too. But my system didn't pick up on that. The average for the others was around 460 units.
That's probably about right. Yeah.
But 18 of them beyond reorder.
Yeah.
Beyond the other two.
Yeah, that's huge.
So I was looking at that this evening, and it's like, wow, that really kind of popped out as highly unusual. Where do you think the future of kind of the Masterworks, the archives are? Because it seems like the showcases and the essentials, kind of the black and white, much more affordable trade paperback volumes and stuff have really fallen by the wayside. At one point, they seemed to be all the rage a couple of years back. Now, they're still doing a few.
Yeah, you know, I still think there's a market for the Masterworks. In fact, it's becoming more of a premium market because the prices keep going up. The latest Masterworks that were in the Marvel solicits that came out this week, the Fantastic Four Volume 15, if you can believe it, John, $70. I mean, I remember when they first started coming out, they're all 50.
Yeah.
And then they went up to 55 and then 60 and then
didn't they start closer to 40?
No, they're always at 50.
Maybe I'm thinking the...
The archives, when they first came out, the first DC few archives, were 40.
That's what
I was
thinking.
Quickly changed up to, you know, higher. And those things are now $60. And the Wonder Woman one that's coming out in February, I think that's going to be $75. I mean, they are getting bigger on the page count. So, I mean, they're almost like a mini omnibus or an absolute in a way, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, they're still expensive and there's still a market for it. The showcases and the essentials, they've fallen off too. There's another Essential Wolverine coming out in the latest solicits. I think it's number 5 or 6, you know, halfway through the most recent, you know, 1990s Wolverine. So that's the most recent as far as new materials, not just sticking with the 1970s stuff, but it's, you know, with the movie coming out, that definitely helps too.
Yeah, certainly.
But yeah, I mean, there's a few showcases still to come out on the DC side, which is good to see. But yeah, I think they're falling by the wayside, and I think that in DC's case anyway, and we've seen this in the past 6 to 8 to 12 months, is that they're opting for more of a showcase, not in a sense of black and white showcase, but showcasing an artist or creator with, you know, Tales of the Batman, Alan Davis, and books of that ilk coming out. A nice hardcover volume. And we just saw the Gil Kane Superman book coming out. So they're really showcasing the character with the artist or writer. And Marvel's done this for years on their visionary side, but that's kind of fallen by the wayside. So, you know, DC's kind of picked up that slack.
Well, it's interesting because I still think there is a large amount of material from, say, the 80s thereabouts, both Marvel and DC. I mean, a little before in the 70s, a little after and stuff, the early 90s. But at least a decade or two worth of material that still, by and large, has not been collected.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as some of these properties get turned back into a miniseries or show up in other places or get their own series or whatever, you know, you've got the new Nova thing. Now would be a time to make sure all the Nova stuff's been collected. I'm sure it probably has been, but you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah, well, they've got the Nova, the old Nova stuff. They've got one essential, but nothing of like, you know, they had the Champions classic series, but that kind of went nowhere. Yeah, but.
I went for a few volumes, but it seems to me they've got an entire era at both companies that if they were to do 6-issue trades, maybe a 7th if they need, depending where the story breaks or whatever. Because these were more at the time of the never-ending battle versus the collected-to-trade mentality.
Right.
And just do it to where every other month they just kick some of these, you know, one of these series out or something. To where you could almost be, if you paced yourself, reading an issue a week and go through a 100-issue series or something.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, I think... Well, for that matter, collecting the Marvel Comics Presents runs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that'd be great. I'd love to have that. Yeah.
There's a lot of great stuff that, surprisingly, still has yet to be collected.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot that obviously has been collected, arguably too much. But when they're, again, bringing back some of these characters, I mean, the Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff are, you know, making a little bit of a comeback in a few places and stuff here and there in the Marvel Universe. There was that entire Jim Valentino series and stuff. Has that been fully collected?
They are. They started that. Yeah, they're doing that in those big softcover Ultimate books. And, yeah, as far as I know, all of that stuff will get collected. I know the first two volumes have been officially solicited on Amazon and one with Marvel itself. But, yeah, they're eventually going to get all that, which was that was good stuff. Now, what's funny is on the DC side of that thing, you see the, you know, Amethyst, Princess of Gemworld, get her, you know, new 52 gig.
Mm-hmm.
And in celebration of that, DC reissues arguably one of the biggest showcases ever to be produced with her, all her classic stuff in black and white, and her series gets canceled. You know, I just think that is like, boy.
I don't think they should have done that in black and white. I think what they should have done was time it such that they get a trade paperback of the original 12-issue maxi series, followed by a month or two later, another volume or two that collected the ongoing series, then another that collected the mini series, and then right as you've caught up and gotten up to speed or whatever, now here's the new take in Sword of Sorcery.
Right.
You know, I think they, They have a lot of things that they could be getting in print and stuff. I mean, back at Marvel, the Alpha Flight 120-130 issue run.
Man, yeah.
Has that been collected?
Well, they did the Alpha Flight classic trade paperbacks. I'm not sure what number they're up to now.
Okay.
But they are starting to get that out. But yeah, I mean, there's a million things they can collect, you know, for sure.
So
there's no end in sight.
So. I think that's a definite possible, you know, thing, revenue stream or whatever they could have. And I think if they gear it kind of like what CrossGen did with the Edge, the Forge. I forget what the other two were, but you know the ones I'm talking about, where they just basically, here's half our titles, we're collecting that month's worth into a trade. You know, imagine if you could go through the Marvel Universe or a subset of it or the DC Universe on an almost week-by-week basis and get that stuff collected and trade for a reasonable price.
You know, we always talk about Valiant lately on our podcast, and, you know, Valiant is doing a very good job of bringing out hardcover, deluxe hardcovers of their classic material, but I almost wish they would ramp it up and start bringing out more volumes a little more often instead of, you know, XO, you know, classic, which was, you know, a few months ago, and then the Bloodshot one, and, you know, I wish they would kind of crank it out a little bit more, and I don't think it really has to be in hardcover, even though it's nice to have it in a hardcover. I'd like to almost see, like, a, you know, put it out in a $12.99 trade of 10 issues or something like that.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll eventually get there, you know, maybe get the first wave out in hardcover and, you know, who knows what's going to happen, but, it's good to see. And, in fact, let me pull it up, cause I don't know if you knew about this.
Well, and at rank 44 was the Harbinger Volume 1 Omega Rising trade paperback, $10, yeah. $9.99, 1,656 units, which is pretty good opening numbers for their first, collection of original stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right, but I'm talking also about their old classics.
Yeah, no, I know, XO and stuff. But it's nice to see that they're able to do kind of both.
Right.
Reprint the old stuff, and that their new stuff is getting a following in the collected edition side.
Right. What I wanted to tell you real quick, if I can pull it up, it's coming out in May, and maybe this will be a precursor to another series coming out from Valiant. And if I can find it real quick, I'm thinking of something else. Coming out in May will be Valiant Masters Shadow Man Volume 1, collecting 0 through 7 from 1992, and material from Dark Passages Number 1. So that's cool.
But if they were to do like a trade of the Second Life of Dr. Mirage, or Rye and the Future Force, or some of these others, they've got just a lot of stuff they could do. Now, I think with Valiant, the trick is getting it out quickly, but not too quickly.
Right.
You want to have something that you can keep, you know, putting out, and then to where they're not 2-3 years in and suddenly all their classic stuff's all collected.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they also don't want to get 2 or 3 years in and still have a lot of it not collected that people are sitting there, oh, wow, I really want. What gets me, you know, that I think is really good for Valiant right now, on the comic side, is they have really strong average sales. By what I mean is the average sales for their titles is really stronger than a lot of other publishers. It's third behind Marvel and DC. But on average, their titles are doing better than Image titles, Dark Horse titles, IDW titles, you know, Dynamite, Boom, etc. Part of that is they have only a handful of titles, and they're tightly clustered in where they sell on the monthly side. If they can keep up that average sales level, add a title, keep that going, then, you know, a little while later, add another, and go for a slow growth kind of a thing, and never get to the point where it's just, oh gosh, I've got to go get, you know, 18 titles to go find out what's going on in this universe.
Right.
You know, keep it accessible, keep it going, keep the level there. I mean, they could just be a juggernaut eventually.
Oh, yeah. And then you're also going to bring over... not that they don't have quality talent working on the books now, but really maybe get a couple names working on a couple books.
I think the key...
I hear Jeff Johns is off Green Lantern. He might be looking for a job.
I doubt he's looking for a job. He's still got the chief creative officer position, I think. But a
guy can wish.
Well, I mean, that's going to be interesting on the DC side, though, because he's getting off Green Lantern, and the creative teams for... New Guardians and Green Lantern Corps are going to be rotating out in June.
Yeah.
So Red Lanterns is going to be the one that I believe is going to keep its creative team, although I'm not certain of that.
How are the numbers on that book, just off the top of your head, you know?
Red Lantern?
Yeah, is it pretty strong, or could you see that one getting cut?
I could see that one getting cut, not necessarily immediately.
Yeah.
Diving over to the comic side for
a moment.
It's on
the chopping block, you think, for 2013?
Well, let's go through. Green Lantern, these are all going to be the 16th issues, because they were the first wave of titles. So Green Lantern, 72,875. Green Lantern Corps, 45,381, so big drop compared to the other title. New Guardians, 43,764. The Green Lantern Corps annual did 81,831. The New Guardians annual did 36,669. So the annuals are selling noticeably lower than the core title is.
Right.
And then Red Lanterns, 38,218.
Mm.
So it's not in the danger zone,
right?
But out of the four, that would be the one to cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got a number of other titles that are in the danger zone. Anything really below 20,000, I would say, is got to be under consideration. So that would be, you know, Phantom Stranger, Green Arrow, All-Star Western, I think, may get a pass because it's, you know, it's a Western versus another superhero book.
Right.
Passing by the things that are digital first, I'm actually going to be a little curious if the JSA Liberty Files Whistling Skull makes it through the whole thing.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if they try to abort that to trade.
Mm-hmm.
Legion of Superheroes, Ravagers has been announced as canceled. Team 7's announced
right.
as canceled. Dial H.
Yeah.
Stormwatch, Demon Knights, Sword of Sorcery's announced as canceled. Same with Legion Lost. I think 16 was the last issue of Frankenstein. Batwing's getting a bold new direction, but I don't think that's going to save it.
Right.
Savage Hawkman's announced as canceled, as is Deathstroke and iVampire, as well as DC Universe Presents. Blue Beetle has ended. Firestorm is another one that's announced as ending. 11,360.
Man. And then I saw the new solicits for the new books coming up, and I don't know, man. I mean, do they need to have 52 books or whatever it is? Why don't they just keep 40 or so?
Well, yeah. let's talk about that, but I want to get to one thing real quick.
Yeah.
That Fury of Firestorm and the Nuclear Man, 11,360. Okay, not great sales. Firestorm has had over 100 issues in the past. I would say about 150. The previous series to the New 52 was collected because it was during that time. The original Fury of Firestorm series, that went for 100 issues, and they haven't collected that. I've got to wonder if they had been collecting that, again, six issues at a time or whatever made sense. Could that have, I don't know, maybe garnered some interest, you know, in the current Firestorm series?
You know, you sent me a text yeah. this week regarding Firestorm, and I replied back there was the one
the
trade paperback. Was that the original, or was that the one you're looking for?
That was the original.
Okay.
I was looking for to see if they had collected any of the Fury of Firestorm, not the Firestorm series. The Firestorm
was
before
the Nuclear Man one. Okay.
The DC implosion and stuff.
Okay.
So, I mean, what I'm saying, there's about a decade's worth of material. I mean, there's a decade's worth of some pretty good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back when they would tell, you know, done in one, done in two type stories. So they might have a few places, like I said, to go find where to go break a trade or whatever.
Yeah.
But at this point, you know, granted they may not have it in digital format ready to collect, but I got to imagine putting everything into digital anyways is on their to-do list.
Yeah.
They've got a flood of things that could be really supporting their current stuff. You know, for Blue Beetle, they had the 25 issue or so Ted Kord series back in the day.
That was a great series, yeah.
And have they collected it?
No, to my knowledge, no.
So there's all of that. But going back to your question of 52 titles, do they need 52 titles? I've gotten this question a lot. Matter of fact, I got a private message on the comic book page forum just today around that. Matter of fact, there was a link off one of the comic book resources, you know, their AM, kind of here's everything on the net things, where somebody had put an article, I think on Publishers Weekly, wondering the same question, do they need to have that many titles? And on the one hand, obviously not. 52 is a lot of titles. That's a dozen a week, essentially, a little over. On the other hand, there is absolutely no reason to think if they were to cut down on that number that they would suddenly have better sales on the remaining titles. There's also no real reason to think that if they had started with a lower number or whatever, that they would have picked the right ones.
True.
I mean, note how many we just went through, how many titles we went through there on the DC side that are still going. And there's at least a half dozen that are obvious cancellations.
Mm-hmm.
And obvious in a, oh my God, how have they not canceled this yet way? So what I would do if I were them, and I've talked about this some on my column on Comic Book Resources. I'm sure we've talked about it on the show before. You've got a couple of titles that are doing well. Great. Go find something that's not, or go get another one up to that level.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have kind of two prongs. You've got to have some editors, some creative teams that are better at sustaining a title than kind of launching or rebuilding a title. Now, that's actually kind of a silly argument for me to make, I suppose, given there is overwhelming evidence that few creative teams and editors can actually sustain sales on a title. And in most cases, things are going down by a couple of percent every issue. Until they get that tackled and fixed, it's almost a moot point. But if you can get that to where you can stabilize a title, and there are a couple that are reasonably stable, you know, Hawkeye, maybe a few titles like that, you then have a firm ground to be building sales on. Not every title has got the potential of having the 100,000 plus sales or whatever.
Right.
But I've got to imagine we've got more than the handful of titles that there are right now. I've got to imagine there are more than two titles, Batman and Justice League, over at DC, or maybe I should say two properties, that are capable of doing 100,000 in sales. Now, maybe you got to get the right property, the right creative team, and a little bit of luck to make that happen. But go find that. You know, it's the equivalent of, do you have that talent scout that the athletic teams have to go find that right person for that right position, be it the right artist to work on a certain book, or the right writer, or the colorist, the inker, whatever it may be. You know, can you get somebody who can assemble a really good creative team? Can you find creative teams that can rebuild, revector a title in a smooth way that you don't read it one issue and then the next thinking, wow, that was a major sharp turn, and build stuff up like Jeff Johns has done with Green Lantern, like Scott Snyder's done on Batman, like Jeff Johns has done on Justice League and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then can you then hand it off to other creative teams and sustain?
Mm-hmm.
With Jeff Johns and friends getting off the Green Lantern titles, are those going to go into a free fall? Are they going to find somebody who can step up to the plate after them and keep it going?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see for sure if they can sustain that, all that success, especially for, what, a 10-year run that Johns had? I mean, my God, that's no easy feat.
Well, I mean, think back to the Jim Lee, I guess it was Jeff Loeb, Hush storyline in Batman.
Mm-hmm.
That lasted a year. And if you look at the sales on that title, it was at one level. That thing started, it just shot up.
Mm-hmm.
And it stayed more or less at that level. I mean, there was some noise and stuff for about a year. They end, boom, almost right back to where it was.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a second act to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not an easy handoff to do, but we've seen it done. We've seen it done on Daredevil after Bendis's run. We've seen it done over on Iron Fist when they flipped the creative team to Matt Fraction, or mm-hmm. from, I forget which one it was. It can be done. It's not easy. But if you can do that and really not have the sales miss a beat, that's how you're going to be successful. That's how you're going to wind up with trades that don't have, you know, huge fluctuations in sales or whatever, or feel so compartmentalized, where this volume of a given title doesn't really seem like it follows on the heel of the previous volume, you know? But given how they're doing so many volumes of titles, so many revectoring, rechanging of art teams, creative teams, writing, tone, style, etc., it's almost they've gotten into a short story or novel approach versus the never-ending battle, the ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... I want to see DC continue. I think 52 is a viable number. I think it's a little aggressive, but hey, they're, I think, locked into it. And I want to see them go on a two-pronged approach. I want to see them do, every time they announce some titles, a couple that, wow, I'm really excited, I can't imagine that'll fail. Kind of an Earth 2, a World's Finest, you know, the Justice League stuff when they announced it, etc. Mm-hmm. And I want to see them go on the other extreme. I want to see them pull out some stuff that it's like, okay, I didn't see that coming. That seems like a real risk, but it's just so crazy it might work.
Well, I think you were going to see that with these upcoming solicitations that just came out from DC.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are a couple titles in there. I don't know what they could be about, but we're going to find out. You know, I think that's part of the excitement.
Yeah.
So
again, take some risks. That's where the big payoff could be.
Mm-hmm.
But make them smart risks. So we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Top item this time around on the list, Fables Volume 18, 9,457 units. Second one is Saga Volume 1, reorder activity on that. It had originally come out, what, back in October there.
Mm-hmm.
And we got another 8,545 units. That, you know, I look at that and I'm thinking, wow, that seems a little surprising and stuff. I'm wondering if... I've been doing some cleanup on the data this time around, and I know mm-hmm. with the Fable stuff that the previous stuff is kind of wrong because I didn't have time to clean all of the data. I would be a little surprised if that happened with Saga, but it's showing as reorder, and I'm not seeing any previous sales, so I'm not sure what I messed up on the number crunching. But either way, you know, 8,500 plus for that is pretty impressive.
I thought Saga just came out, actually.
Expected ship date and first ship date that I've got here is 10/10/12.
Oh, maybe you're right. Oh, you know what? I'm not looking at the right list. That's why.
Oh.
That's why. Yeah, okay. I'll pull up an exact date for you on next. That would be good to look at.
Other things that popped up in the top 10, we've got the second hardcover for Justice League, The Villain's Journey, 5,918. And we've also, right below it, got the first volume trade paperback of Justice League, 5,164 units, both of which came out on January 30th. So they're looking to be following the trade kind of one volume behind or whatever. We'll see how well that works. I'm still not crazy about the whole, you know, triple dipping, you know, regular issues and the trade and the hardcover, but I get why they do it. We had two artist editions on the list this time around. At rank 27, we had the Gil Kane Amazing Spider-Man Artist Edition. It did 2,003 estimated units. And then further down at rank 103, we had the Mad Artist Edition hardcover, 1,074 units. Now that one was $112.50, while the Gil Kane was $95.
Mm-hmm.
The other key difference is the Mad Artist Edition had a variety of different artists and creators in it, whereas obviously the Gil Kane just had the Gil Kane.
Yeah, the Mad one I know had all the covers of the original comic book run, all 24 mm-hmm. covers. I think that was part of it. So it was almost like a best of kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah, I really dig IDW doing those things. Mm-hmm. I think it's fun. I've got about a half dozen or more of them already.
Kind oh, of you do? Really?
Me. I was putting, I was putting the Gil Kane one away and noticing, well, I hadn't realized I'd gotten quite so many. Because I also got the Rocketeer one.
Okay.
It just came out. What else did I get?
I've got the Mazzucchelli Daredevil one.
I think I got that one. I got...
Did you get the Wally Wood one?
I don't think I got the Wally Wood one.
Okay. The Tarzan one?
No.
Spirit one is not out yet.
Wouldn't have ordered that one either. I'm blanking on the others. I'd have to go to the other room.
I know. Find Sorry. It.
No, it's all right. But whatever the superhero-ish type stuff would have been or other artists.
Oh, did you get the Gru?
Yeah, I got the Gru.
Okay.
So... There are a couple that it's like, yeah, I would have gotten, so I did.
Mm.
I always hate it when they come out in an otherwise busy order month, because I usually squeeze them in anyways. One that kind of surprised me this time around, because I just wasn't expecting to see it, although I think it totally deserves what it did. At rank 40, we've got the Global Frequency Trade Paperback, 1,794 units. Now, you've read Global Frequency, yes?
No, I have not. No.
It's right there on the list. Go get the thing. No,
I did notice, though, because I look at the in-stock trades top 10 every mm-hmm. week right on their homepage, and that has been on the top 10 of their sales. So I'm not surprised to see it rank so high here.
Again, that's material that's, you know, reasonably old. Although this is saying mm-hmm. it's a expected to ship... January 30th, and it did ship January 30th, 13. Is this a new printing?
No, this is a new one, I believe. Yeah.
Because this is the original stuff from way back in the day. I mean, 10 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, no, this just came out because I know on my Friday list that I do, one of the guys recommended this book.
Had they not collected this before?
As far as I know, they've never collected it.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, seriously.
Wow.
Yeah.
Then I'm surprised it placed so low. This is good stuff. For people who are unfamiliar with it, it was a 12-issue series by Warren Ellis.
Warren Ellis, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was essentially 12 done-in-one stories about the global frequency. This was a team of people. There were one or two or three, you know, regular members, including, I think, the operator. And there were a bunch of people, experts in various fields across the world of different things, you know. And they had this kind of really funky cell phone. Now, it was about 10 years ago this was done, so it was a pretty big, clunky one, but it's still. And basically what would happen is if something went wrong somewhere in the world, and either particular expertise was needed or they just needed feet on the ground in the right place, now the phone would ring. You're on the global frequency. We've got a problem. You've got to solve it. And it was something that was had almost a Mission Impossible-ish vibe in terms of, you know, you've got to do the impossible. You've got to do it now. That kind of action adventure stuff. They actually did a TV pilot for this, which I thought was a lot of fun.
Oh, you watched it?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, cool.
This is something that was, I think, one of his best works, and he's done some great stuff.
Yeah, Shane, who wrote on my blog, recommended this book, and he kind of likens it to kind of like a Fringe-type series, if you like Fringe.
Haven't actually watched Fringe. That's on the list of stuff to
fantastic,
watch.
Fantastic, yeah.
But this is something that, particularly for like a TV show, whatever, it's lends itself to the leads of the episode being guest stars.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Now, I don't think that was necessarily the direction they went.
Kind of like the Love Boat?
Kind of, sort of. But, I mean, it's essentially, well, think about it. If the only person you have is the regular,
yeah,
is the person who's placing the call saying, here's the problem, here's what we need you to go do. Everyone else, and that could be just a standing set that the person almost never leaves, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But then
almost
you can
like Fantasy Island or Love Boat or something like that, yeah.
Exactly, but you don't need the regular cast of, or crew of the ship, yeah, or what have you.
Right, right.
Everybody else who's actually solving the problem, doing the actions, the activity or whatever, can be almost anybody anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point you may need somebody who's a nuclear physicist, other times you may need a brain surgeon, you may need a mechanic. You may just need somebody who can, you know, be at the right time at the right place or whatever.
Yeah.
Somebody who can fly a plane, you know, whatever. So, you know, there's a little bit of mystery of how do these people get the phones, how do they get on it, whatever.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Because I think there was like 1,000 people in the world who had it, whatever. But it was
where's the pilot? Is it on YouTube? Can I watch it on YouTube? On Hulu or something like
I've
that?
I've got to imagine it's on YouTube. I watched it ages ago.
Okay.
But the trade paperback is definitely worth doing.
All right.
This is the sort of thing that really surprises me they had not collected this sooner. I mean,
I had never heard about this series. I mean, maybe I have way back when it came out, but when did this publish? 10 years ago?
I'm thinking it did, but I don't have the solicitation blurb in front of me, so I don't know for
certain.
Yeah,
I don't have it here. I don't know when it came out.
Actually, hang on. I've got all the solicitation blurbs going back about 10 years. This was October 2012?
Huh.
Global Frequency. All right. It was 12-issue series. It also had a ton of different artists.
Okay.
This
was a Vertigo book when it came out then?
I believe
it's being listed
it
here as Vertigo.
I was thinking it was Wildstorm, actually, but I'm not
okay.
sure. And the solicit doesn't say when it was originally done.
I'll see if I can find it here.
But, again, for a 12-issue, you know, 12 done-in-one stories and stuff, this just, you know, is so worth picking up and reading. And it's something that, you know, they could continue with today if they really wanted to.
Yeah, they probably could. You're probably right.
I'm looking up in Comic Book DB now. Oops.
I can't find the exact date it came out. Oh, boy. We are not on target.
I'm thinking it was 10 years ago-ish, give or take.
Okay.
Could be as much as 15. I don't remember.
No, you're probably right. Late 1990s, early 2000s. That's all I'm getting. Yeah. Huh.
See,
anyway, it sounds like a pretty cool book.
2002.
10 years ago. There you go.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I don't even. I vaguely remember it even coming out 10 years ago. Huh. I will definitely check that out, John.
No, I remember it and really enjoyed it.
Now, with the 12 issues, do you remember it being a tight, finite series, or did they leave it hanging? Or?
Well, that was the thing. It was done kind of sort of like an episodic TV show.
Okay.
So in almost every case, it was done in one.
Okay.
And there was a little carryover maybe of a few things here and there, what was going on between the person who was like making the phone calls and the one who ran the organization. You know, those two people. But, like, the leads may have been different every issue or whatever. The artists were certainly different every issue.
See, that's kind of cool. The art was different every issue. I would like that.
So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that if they were to do a TV show, they could have different film crews doing concurrently.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet.
I mean, they could, yeah. There's a lot they could do with this. And I would really like to see the property, you know, picked back up.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it was fun.
Oh, maybe with the advent of this trade and just by you and I talking about it, that, you know, it'll get picked back up.
And it was definitely
maybe we can
a,
start the snowball.
Yeah, definitely a Wildstorm book.
It was? Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting because the trade dress has Vertigo on the title now.
Hmm. That is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And is this the full thing? Because there were
12 issues. Yep.
12 issues. All right. Because there were two trades previously.
Okay. Oh, there was.
That's what I'm seeing on ComicBookDB.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So.
Well, here you get the whole shot for $20. Can't beat that. That's
no. That's the way to do it.
For $20, that's awesome.
Yeah. So again, I was surprised to see it because again, I haven't really thought about the series in ages, but really enjoyed it. Really good stuff. Now, down at rank 46, we got Culling, Rise of the Ravagers trade paperback. That was the Culling crossover that led into the Ravagers. 1,619 units. So, not horrible, but not stellar. Certainly, I think that may have been one of the things that led to them deciding not only should Legion Lost go away, but maybe Ravagers should too.
Mm-hmm.
Teen Titans, of course, is selling fine, so I don't think it's in any danger.
Superboy selling all right, too.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, there are a couple of these over there that kind of surprised me and stuff. I mean, Superboy is not selling brilliantly. It's around the 27,100 mm-hmm. level.
Yeah, I mean, you know me. I was reading Superboy when it first came out. I thought it was a great storyline. It fit in well if you're watching Young Justice on TV on Saturday mornings, kind of like that Superboy, but in a way. But... You know, and he crossed over into Teen Titans where he should be crossing over to. But when this Cummings thing started, and now they're doing the Hell on Earth, I really think that Superboy has just been off the rails. And I'm really disappointed in the title, actually.
They've done too many crossovers with it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it's selling below Supergirl, which has more or less been a self-contained title for the most part. Obviously, with the Hell on Earth, not so much the case. But Superboy is tied into Legion Lost, Ravagers, Teen Titans, Superman, and I'm thinking one other title, but I mean,
well,
just
he's in the Superman annual
that
this
too.
Month too, so which kind of takes place in between the panels on Hell on Earth.
Yeah,
but you know, it just the first six issues were great, a lot of fun, but then you start shoving him into all these miniseries, and he has to show up in all these books. It's like enough, you know, lost me. So I'm not even reading anymore. I mean, not even interested in getting the Hell on Earth stuff. You know, I'm just not. So
I can understand that.
Yeah, yeah.
So when they collect the stuff to trade and whatnot, these crossovers and stories like that, you know, Death of the Family, The Culling, Night of the Owls, things like that, do you think it's beneficial to have had these crossovers or just kind of gets in the way in how they would collect the other issues around it?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the Hell on Earth is going to be a Superman book, and Death in the Family, of course, is going to be a Batman book, you know.
Right, but it's going to collect the issues from the other titles.
Right, yeah.
And it seems like it makes it a little more awkward to cross the stuff over than if it was just, okay, let's take the next six issues of Batgirl versus, you know, let's take the next two, skip the other two because they're going to collect it there, double dip, or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you never know how it's going to pan out with these editors and what the, I mean, there, you think there's a contract behind all that, too? How
I don't
they're
think
gonna
there's
collect
a,
it
a contract. I think it's just whatever makes sense at the time.
Whatever
I guess my question is more along the lines of, since you keep track of the collected editions and kind of the buzz around them a lot mm-hmm. more than I do people kind of like that they collected that way? Does it annoy the people who want just the collection of the titles? what seems to be the, yeah, if there, you know, even is a consensus.
Yeah, I don't even know if there is. I think that I think there are those who would like to have it both ways, honestly, because they just want to collect the Superboy titles or the Supergirl titles and not worry about the Hell on Earth. However, if they read the Supergirl straight through, they're going to be lost because it does cross over so heavily. So, you know, you are, as long as there's some way, in, I don't know if you can retroactively do this, though, but, you know, you get the first trade of Superboy, and then you're automatically looking for the second trade of Superboy, but actually the second trade of Superboy is going to be the Culling with the Ravagers, right?
Yeah.
Or something to that effect. And there's no way for you to find that out if you pick up the first trade.
It's easy to kind of map the timeline of issues,
mm-hmm.
trying to do the condensation of that into the trades and say, okay, if you wanted these six, you'd start with this trade. The next trade is this. Then it bounces over to the Culling. Then it bounces down to Hell on Earth. Then it bounces over to the left for this or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
It gets kind of confusing, and I've got to wonder if there is a backlash in terms of how it sells and what people are thinking and stuff. Is it more confusion than people are really wanting to deal with?
I think it's confusion. But if you're a fan of that one character, and if you got a halfway decent brain, I think you can figure out, you know, where on the internet to find all that information and to look it up on a, you know, whether it be Amazon or DCBS or something like that, or comics.org or comicsdb, to find out what the exact sequence of trade paperbacks are.
I don't think people are incapable of finding it out.
Yeah.
I think they don't care to find it out.
Well, that's true too, and that's why sales dip, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do away with crossovers, I guess.
No, not entirely. I think the Valiant approach is actually going to be very interesting.
I love the Valiant approach.
They're taking...
I can't wait for it to start.
They're taking Bloodshot. They're taking Harbinger. They're going to have a crossover. The crossover looks like it'll happen in a third title, a miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those two titles are telling parallel stories related to it, kind of like what they've done in Animal Man and Swamp Thing.
Oh, my God. I was talking to a colleague of mine at work about that today. I'm ready for Rot World to end any day now. It's been going on for so long.
I was thinking that, too, actually.
Oh,
it's 18 issues in, and they're still on it. And that's what the stuff started on.
Man, just enough is enough. And and the thing is, it's not just in one title, John. It's in two titles. So double the amount of comic books.
Yes, yes.
Man.
Plus a few issues of Frankenstein.
Yeah. It's like, geez, just end it.
Well, to me, one of the differences between comics today and comics back when I was starting to read, you read half a dozen issues, you get at least a handful of stories. Maybe not six, they may not all be done in one, but you'll at least get two or three, and some stuff will happen. So you'll have seen the hero fight different villains. It felt more like you were, you know, following the life of the hero and the different adventures they had.
Right.
Now you're getting a story for half a year, six issues, however mm-hmm. long that takes to dole out. Maybe half a year, maybe a half a month, depending, because some of these are coming out fast.
That's why we've talked about Valiant. And man, do a lot of things happen in a short amount of time. Those books are just cooking.
Well, and that's exactly, that's the pacing.
Yeah.
You know, we got Ninjak in, Exo, but he'd already fought the stuff of the aliens, the first couple of issues. I mean, by six issues in, a number of different major plot point things had happened. It didn't feel rushed. It felt like
right.
It was moving. It was, like you said, it was really cooking. Whereas in an average Marvel DC title, you got a six issue arc to kind of stroll through to get something. Another six issue arc to kind of stroll through to get something.
Like,
you string three of them together for Rot World, and it's like, you know, like you said, is this ever going to end?
Well, and I like kind of the offshoot titles of Justice League Dark and Demon Knights and All-Star Western, but boy, those things are just dragging too. It's like, come on, let's go.
I guess the question I've got here is, at what point does something really truly become an ongoing series in the sense of having told more than one story? And at what point is something that may have been solicited as ongoing, may technically have been an ongoing, but really it told one story and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Guarding the Globe, first volume, six issues, miniseries. Current Guarding the Globe, just finished, six issues, ongoing series.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, really, it told one story throughout the six issues. It told it was a de facto miniseries. You know, I would argue Animal Man, 18 issues in-ish, you know, that far, hasn't really gotten to that second story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's continuing. Is it an ongoing series with multiple stories? You see what I'm getting at?
I see you're getting at. Let me ask you this, because you and John, you and Bob just reviewed this, I think, on one of your shows. But how has the pacing of Hawkeye been? Pretty good?
Hawkeye has been predominantly done in one. There was one that went two issues, but then the latest issue we reviewed, number 7,
right,
essentially had two short stories, bringing its average to literally done in one.
So do you like the pacing, though? Is it? I hear really good things about it, and I haven't picked it up yet.
That was a title that had first issue sales, dropped after that on the second, and then almost instantly leveled. And I'm liking it. It feels like we're following the life of this character, of Clint Barton Hawkeye. And it feels like we're getting the character, not the collection of powers in a costume. And one of the things I miss about comics I read as a kid is it felt like I was following the adventures of Flash, of Peter Parker, of,
yeah,
you know, whomever, versus, you know, again, here's a six-issue Flash story, beginning, middle, thump, it's over,
mm-hmm,
you know, or a six-issue Spider-Man thing. I think part of why Hawkeye's got the buzz and why it'll be very interesting to see how that first collection does is it had payoff pretty much every single issue.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Done in Two had payoff at the end of the first. So it gives me the value for the money. You know, is it big, epic, massive story and tons of depth or whatever? It may not even be the densest of read, but it's being written as if it's being sold in single issues. And guess what? It is being sold in single issues. How many times, Justice League Dark, there was an issue of the current story arc where, I forget if they're like up in the Antarctic or whatever, they're outside the House of Mystery and stuff. The agents from wherever have come by. They've lost a few of their members through a portal or whatever, and they're like, what do we do now?
Yeah.
The next issue, they were all standing around. Amethyst and Frankenstein stroll through the House of Mystery, have a random adventure, come out, and the whole thing ends with a what do we do now, which is more or less where they started. And there was some throwaway action, but that entire issue, while it had some Easter eggs and quote-unquote character moments or quote-unquote plot progression, was something they easily could have cut the entire thing.
Yeah.
So to me, that's padded storytelling. Now, I enjoyed the issue. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought the Easter eggs we got with Constantine's office, all that kind of stuff was cool. I liked the character interaction between Frankenstein and Amethyst. I thought we got some good character definition and moments for both. However, essential reading, not at all. And I think where Valiant's doing it right is, again, it's cooking. It's got stuff in every issue. It feels like if you miss an issue, you've missed something important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I would hope will help them retain sales and potentially get to where their entire line. It is conceivable that in another couple issues or whatever, we could see their entire line just slowly starting to grow in sales.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we will, maybe we don't. I certainly hope we do. I think they've got good production value. They're telling good stories. They've gotten good creative teams, solid editing. It's well done. Whereas a lot of these other things, yeah, they're okay. I'm enjoying them just fine. But am I surprised that they're losing sales every issue? Not really. That was a long-winded answer, wasn't it?
No, you're good. You're good.
You get me going, I just keep ranting. Now, I think it's interesting how some of these are doing. I think, you know, the fact the bottom of the list is 357 units. The top of the list, 9,457 units. So we've got a 9,100 unit gap between the top and the bottom. And it doesn't take long before we're below 2,000 units. We're below that before we get out of the top 30.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think there's around 2,000, 3,000 stores, on average, most of them aren't getting a copy of everything. And frankly, nor should they. I mean, 300 trades, that's going to take up some space.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see what happens. I think there's an art and a science to what you collect and when you collect, but I don't know that anyone's really cracked that nut brilliantly yet.
No.
And I think that's an answer that 20 years ago when I was thinking about publishing comics, my entire plan, and it was revolutionary at the time, do six issues, collect to trade. Do six, collect to trade. You know, which is exactly what they're doing now, just as part and parcel of everything.
Right.
And what I guess I was too young to see at the time was that's essentially training people to say, you know, you don't have to buy the issues, you can wait. And like we're seeing here with the Justice League, people could have skipped the issues. They could have skipped the hardcover. Now they can skip the trade. They could have even skipped the digital. That's four different ways you could skip reading the story. Because, well, it's always going to be available. I can either go hunt down the back issues, I can get the hardcover, the trade. There are bookstores that will always be available, and even if they're not, I can just go hop on Comixology and pull it there. Well, if you could always do it, you never do it.
And the digital editions of, it's day and date now. You know.
Well,
and I want to talk about the pirated copies you can get. Oh, God.
Yeah. I forget which comic I was reading the backup, the text piece in, was basically suggesting that their pirated count, circulation or whatever was equal to their print one. And maybe it isn't. I question how they track that. And they admitted that they didn't have complete visibility. So it could be even higher. Who knows? But all of that just cuts the urgency to buy, and it makes it easy just to, I can do it later.
Mm-hmm.
Digital, again, we've talked about this a number of times, it throws so many questions into the air and has the potential of answering so many of, you know, why do people buy what they buy? When do they buy it? Is, you know, what issue are people dropping off at? It's not that it gives us different information than we could get through point of sales information at retailers. It's just one-stop shopping to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But contractually, I don't think they can give that out. But man, I would love to see how, I would love to have end reader information from a retailer, particularly over a long period, just to do some data mining. You know, are people waiting for this trade paperback versus are they getting the hardcover? Do the people who do it, were they getting the series in monthly issues? Were they not? Do they jump from one format to the other in either or any direction?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause really, until those questions are not only asked but actually answered, we're going to continue to see both retailers and certainly creators and publishers throwing darts at the wall to see what sticks. And there's no other way for them to kind of crack this nut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these titles aren't selling. Let's throw other ones out there. Maybe we'll get lucky. You know, if people don't know why people are dropping comics. And the whole vote for your wallet, I think, is a great idea. It's a lousy implementation.
Mm-hmm.
People are obviously voting no with their wallet across the board. But they're not voting no on anything specific. There is no mandate. There is no lesson learned. And that's where I think the vote with your wallet fails. And I'm not saying people should now just buy everything because it doesn't work, voting with your wallet, whatever. I'm just saying that it's a silent vote. A vote of omission, essentially, not a negative vote. It's not like you're paying to not buy the issue. I mean, that would send a message. But I don't see that happening either.
Mm-mm.
So, price point-wise, we had a couple of big-ticket items. We talked about the Artist Edition. There was also a Batman and Robin, Batman Reborn Absolute that was just shy of $100. That did 952 units, making it the seventh biggest grossing thing for the month. That Artist Edition, Mad Artist Edition, was the second highest grossing for the month. And the top one was that Gil Kane. So having something that's four, five, six times higher than the price of the surrounding items, oddly enough, brings in more money. It's funny how math works. Anything else strike you as particularly fascinating this time around?
No, I mean, the only thing that strikes me are some of these items that, you know, and you kind of alluded to it just now, but, you know, some of these items that they put them out, for example, at rank 233,
mm-hmm.
the Alex Toth Zorro Complete Dell Comics Adventures from Hermes or from Hermes Press, Heroic Publishing. $50. It only did 450 units. And then another one, where was it? It was the Erie Archives. Where is that? That did even less than that, I think.
So it would be below it on the list. I'm just trying
to think. It was below, yeah. But but you know, I'm just wondering why, you know, they put these things out. And you know,
let's talk about that for a minute, because that brings up another thing. I got an email after the last round of numbers with somebody basically asking, this is more towards the monthly side of comics, how come Boom and Dynamite, I think, don't realize they could make more if they had a lower cover price? And the idea is, at what point are you pricing higher or lower? How does that impact? And at what point is it worth doing or not publishing, which is kind of the question you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
And the less they think something is going to sell, the more they're probably going to price it at because they kind of feel they have to. With the realization, the more they price it at, the less they realize it's going to sell. But the way this math kind of tends to work is if I don't want to buy something, I really don't care if it's $1 or $20. Or, you know, I mean, I care to a degree. But on the monthly side, something I won't buy at $3.99, I might consider it $2.99. I might be an easy buy it at $1, particularly with the TCBS discount. But there are some of the things like through Aspen and one or two of the other publishers, Boom, that are doing the $1 first issues this year. Even at $1, it's not something I'm interested in. I'm not going to waste the time on it, much less the $1.
Right.
So,
you know, Valiant's going to do that.
But they're also going to do it with stuff I've already got.
Right, right, right.
So I think it's great that they do that. I think the approach they're taking, having already earned their money on it and waiting a sufficient amount of time before panning out the $1 version, doesn't make the people who bought it originally feel burned. So hopefully it won't. I don't think it does. I think they're making some good decisions there of repurposing and reusing their existing material to get new readers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with some of these things, I think in a couple of cases, we've got a few people in power in the industry who are collecting things because they feel it's the right thing to do, not because they think necessarily it's going to be highly profitable. I've got to imagine somebody at IDW, be it Chris Ryle or somebody, just really loves the idea of the artist edition.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and I applaud them for that. I think it's a brilliant thing they're doing and a wonderful thing for the industry. And I would hope every college with a really good art school or whatever in their college library has a complete collection of these things. Because just the work in progress, that kind of stuff is fun. Yeah. Others of these you look at, and there is the question of how did this get greenlit? What were they thinking? Why did they bother? In some of these cases, the smaller publishers don't need as high of a turnover to really make the profit, make the money, make it worthwhile, to keep the cash flow, to keep them in business and stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is only part of the picture. You know, with the comics, we're seeing the majority of the comic sales for most things. Obviously not for Archie, not for a few other things. But for most Marvel, DC, and other publishers that have an exclusive agreement through Diamond, we're getting this data through Diamond, this is like the 80% of their sales, if not more, maybe as high as 90 in some cases. Other cases, it may be as low as 50 or 20, particularly like Archie and stuff. But on the trade side, granted, we don't have Borders anymore. Barnes & Noble is starting to close locations, that sort of a thing. But we still have the mass market outlets mm-hmm. that are helping on this. We have what the publishers and creators are doing at conventions and things like that. So I don't think it's as dire as it looks. Now, granted, in some of these cases, I really don't think these are moving through mass market outlets. So the sales we see in some cases may be pretty low, and in a few cases, I think almost deservedly so.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few of these, again, I don't know what they're thinking. But that's this month. Look at how many things we have that are reorder activity this time around.
Oh, just a ton, yeah.
Over half the list, you know? So once you've paid that price to get the stuff collected, get it out there, get it in print, then you can sell it, then it can stay in print, or you can get it back in print, whatever. Some of these guys may be looking at the long game. Some of them may actually be losing money and going out of business. Don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad they're at least trying in most cases.
Mm-hmm. No, so am I. Yeah. And a lot of these titles, you know, kind of like what I mentioned, it's the niche within the niche. You know,
oh, yeah, yeah. They are narrow sure. casting.
Narrow, very narrow. One of the items that I didn't think I was going to bring it up tonight, but on the Dark Horse solicits this month,
mm-hmm.
you may have seen the Edgar Rice Burroughs Tarzan Sundays collection,
mm-hmm.
$125. And, you know, collecting 2 years' worth of material. NBM did this over 10 years ago, about almost 15 years ago. They did the Sunday collection. And now it looks like Dark Horse has got it. But boy, and I was saying on my podcast this week that, you know, I'm probably going to get volume one, but that might be the only thing I buy, you know, that month of July
yeah.
When it comes out, because, you know, you just can't afford that. And if you look at the artist editions, the discount at DCBS is like 5-10%, because they cost so much that they, you know, they can't afford to give a big discount on some of these because it just it's not going to be mass ordered.
Yeah.
So that's a it's a tight spot. But I wonder if a $125 price point for the Sunday comics from 1931 is going to be a viable book, you know, to put out in a viable, you know, what, 10-volume set.
Well, so. I think that's the kind of thing where some of these are for mass market things, some of these are niche, some of these are just targeted collector material.
Yeah.
That's clearly for targeted me. Collector yeah. material. Right. The people who would be interested in that, I don't want to say are interested at any price, but I think a lot of people, if you dropped it to a $20 thing, are going to say, well, so? You know what I mean?
Well, no, that's the thing. I mean, it's that high ticket, you know, vanity book is yeah. what it is. It's the absolute edition. It's the artist edition. You know, that's what it is. And you're showing it off because anybody can go online and go to the open source and download these Tarzan Sunday comics. You know, they're all, I believe it's public domain. So you can go read them in crappy PDF format if you want to. But if you really want the nice clean version and a nice hardcover on your shelf, you're going to have to chill out the money. I just think it's a lot of money at $125. And maybe it should be a little less, but maybe their costs are too high. And I speculated maybe the Edgar Rice Burroughs estate is mandating that it's going to be a high price point.
I think some of it is, you know, obviously they've got to pay the licensing fee, you know, yeah. whatever. I question how much of a demand there is for that particular material, because it, right. it's not something that's, I think, got a huge, huge potential audience.
Right.
Just because, again, it's older material, it's very specific, you know, whatever.
And it's not like it is the IDW Artist Editions.
Yeah.
I mean, there are Sunday comics. I mean, that's
but
the thing.
But even the Artist Edition, I think, have a very targeted market.
Oh, so do I.
Kind of yeah, the process so. Junkies who are also fans of that stuff and who yeah. are willing to spend that kind of money.
See, I'm not an original art junkie. I'm not a process guy. And the only reason why I bought the Daredevil Mazzucchelli one was because I like Daredevil and I like that storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know? Yeah. I would love to get, I thought about getting the Will Eisner Spirit one. But you know what? I got all the archives.
Yeah.
So, and you know, conversely, I have all the issues of the Mazzucchelli Daredevil too. But you know, it was almost like too good to pass up. So
yeah, no, I can understand that.
Yeah. So again, triple and double dipping in some spots.
Hey, I've done it before. I'll do it again.
Absolutely.
Matter of fact, I'm going to be doing that on the new Crusader stuff from Archie.
Oh, awesome!
Been getting the issues. I'm going to get the trade because it looks like they'll have some additional material there. And that's just fun stuff. Good all-ages superhero oh, stuff.
Yeah.
So stuff have you checked it out yet?
Very little. I want to check out more of it. That's on my to-do list. Yes.
Highly recommended. I think it's fun stuff.
Cool.
So what you got coming up on your show?
Well, John, this week I celebrated two milestones. One, my 350th show in conjunction with my 8-year anniversary of podcasting. 8 years.
Wow. So, congratulations.
I know, man. Thanks. So, and I've known you for 7 of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been a fun ride and podcasting with you every day or every month for what, 5 years now?
Thereabouts. Yeah. We've been doing this for quite some time.
It's been awesome. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And, for the special show, I finally got around to talking about Jack Kirby, who I've never talked about before.
How have you made it that many episodes and not talked about Kirby?
Well, I've talked about, like, his Fantastic Four run and some other stuff and, you know, some books here and there, but I'd never had a dedicated show to his. And you know, what can you say about Jack Kirby that hasn't already been said? So
true.
There are a number of Jack Kirby collected editions and reprint books that are coming out in 2013 from no less than 5 different companies. The licensing for Kirby is everywhere. So it was a lot of fun to take a look at just what is coming up from his estate as it is. And there is a ton of stuff. But yeah, and I did a short little biography, my own, you know, kind of skewed it from Wikipedia, and I read it down, you know, edited it down myself and talked about Jack and a little bit about his life. And I think you'll like it. If you want to find out a little bit about Jack Kirby and what reprints are coming up, yeah, take a listen to the show. So
cool. Sounds good.
A lot of fun. What about you? What's going up on your show?
Let's see. Depending when this episode goes up, the Weekly Comic Spotlight, either before or after it, will have covered Green Arrow, Fearless Defenders, and Legend of the Shadow Clan. The Legend of the Shadow Clan being one of those dollar books, the 10 for 10 that Aspen's doing. So that'll be interesting. We've got the obviously the preview spotlight every month, the whole kit and caboodle, that all kind of stuff. I have, since the last time we talked, I have updated the forum on the website. We now have a spoilers tag. Whole new forum and stuff. It was PHP BB version 2. Something ancient. Now it's a 3. Something brand spanking new and up to date. That was fun. I've had to brush up on my CSS skills for the website.
Oh, that's always fun. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Particularly learning that they cache pages and the changes you make don't show up on the website instantly unless you clear the cache. That cost me an hour or two of why isn't this working grief. But it's all good. It was fun to do. Still making a few tweaks on the website and stuff. Beyond that, just trying to keep up on my reading. I had about 4 dozen comics coming out this week. The next shipment I get, gonna have 4 dozen comics and stuff.
Oh,
there's
God.
Just plenty coming out. And I enjoy reading all this stuff. It's fun. Even stuff that, you know, I look at the stories thinking, well, you know, that could have been, in some cases, should have been better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fun. I enjoy following the characters, seeing where they go. And I find it particularly helpful when we do these kinds of episodes, because while I don't read all the different trades and stuff, a lot of this stuff I've read all the contents of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking down the list, I mean, rank 12 Northlanders, have not read that. But beyond that, we get down to rank 21, One Trick Off Deep Cuts and stuff. I mean, at least 2/3 of this list I've read.
Yeah.
Or at least half. It depends. Sometimes 2/3. So it gives me a good context for what's going on. I like seeing the big picture. And, you know, I'm a story junkie to an extent. Unless something is just boring me to tears, you know, I can usually get something worthwhile out of it. You know, was it a good storyline, good characters, good action, good dialogue, good art?
Right.
And there are a couple of these that, man, I just, looking at the art's just a joy. They could have them just standing around thinking, you know, is the writer going to come up with something and debating that throughout the issue of, well, there's no story yet, huh, go figure. And I could still enjoy it if it's a really good artist.
Mm-hmm.
Flip side, they could have a brilliant plot and some artists can keep me from seeing that.
Oh, yeah, that's the give and take, man.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
I find the comic book format very fun, but, you know, I also tend to watch a lot of TV shows with my sister. Both of us studied narrative theory and stuff in college, and we just enjoy talking about the shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're watching Arrow, get a lot of enjoyment out of that. That's a really good show.
Arrow's okay. Yeah, I don't know. You should really try Fringe, though. I think you'd like it.
I should. That's on the list to do. Another one we're really enjoying is Scandal.
I haven't watched that.
Fun stuff.
Are you watching Person of Interest?
I am watching Person of Interest.
I like that show.
Really,
that show's pretty
that.
Sweet. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of good things on TV and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, again, I just like going through stories and stuff. And as a little bit of a wannabe writer, it's always fun to say, oh, what could they have shored up? What could they have done better?
Now, you're not into horror and gory stuff, so I wonder
I would
if...
say I am specifically not into horror and gory
that's,
stuff.
I'm wondering if you're watching The Following with Kevin Bacon.
I am not. Is okay. It particularly gory?
It's a little bit gory, yeah.
That's good to know. I will probably not watch. It's one that had hit my radar as a maybe. Yeah.
And the latest episode, talking about plot points really slowing to a grind, the last episode went absolutely nowhere with me. And I'm like, you know, they could have told this story in the first 5 minutes and, you know, shut it down, because that's basically what it was.
I think an entire course on narrative could be taught using Lost, the TV show.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Both the, you know, here's a good way to start stuff. Here's some really crappy things to do. Here's some brilliant stuff to do. I mean, they hit the highs, the lows, the whole thing over the course of the 6 seasons.
Oh, yeah.
More so than a few other shows. Other shows are just pretty even keel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that'll do it, man. That's it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered the outside scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.